It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 416. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, so this way you know when I'm going to be going live, when the fresh content is posted up, and that's twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show, and don't forget the wiki. That's at mtswiki.com. There you will find all the details of my studio layout, the equipment, the software I use, but more importantly, links to all of the previous shows and all of the archives where you can link to the audio, all of the show notes and the links, and we go all the way back to show number one. Don't miss out on the wiki. I have great show lined up. I'm going to talk a little bit about SSDs that I meant to get to last week and just ran out of time. I want to talk about a SATA controller and drive problem I ran into with a server for a client. Quick Mac 101 networking, just a little bit. You're a Windows user, you're forced into the Mac world to connect to Windows systems. Couple tips I'm going to give you. And then email. I had three different clients with three separate email issues that you should be aware of if you run into this with anybody, and you'll be armed to be able to solve it for them, solve these problems. Before we get started, we want to thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor of the show. Every IT technician knows when your customer needs help, they need the help right away. They need it this minute. And that's why I recommend Instant House Call for remote support. It just lets you view and control your customer's computer from anywhere, and it's easy to use. And you could try it free right now by clicking on the link on miketechshow.com, right on the left-hand side. And how it works with Instant House Call remote support, your customer clicks on a link on your website, and in seconds, they're taken to a place to download the client. Once you download that client, they click and send a request to you, you accept it, and now you're remote controlling their system. For regular clients, you can even have it set up for unattended mode. It has all the features that you would ever want, that any geek or tech wants. They have the features, they blow away the competition, and right now you can try it free for 15 days by going to instanthousecall.com or clicking on my link. And when you're filling out the information, enter the code podcast and you'll be able to get it free for 15 days. There's also a special offer to the end of the month. And if you mention Mike Tech Show, you can get 2-for-1. So instead of two technician licenses and buying them separately, you're going to be able to get two for the price of one just by mentioning the Mike Tech Show. And we thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor. The first thing I want to talk about is SSD drives. There's so many options out there. There's so many drives. Prices are dropping. But I want to bring up one metric that you should be looking at when you're evaluating which drive you're going to purchase. Now, an SSD drive is a solid state drive that is incredibly fast. You put this as the drive for your primary operating system. You don't store your data. You store your programs and your operating system. Your boot time will be unbelievable. My system when I upgraded and put the SSD drive in, my primary system that I'm using right now to record the show, I put a Samsung 128 gig drive in that, and it boots in 30 seconds. Now, I purchased an OCZ drive that I've got at a great discount, put it in the laptop right behind me, my consulting laptop, and it's an older Windows laptop that has AMD dual core, and it's about 4 years old. I put a 128 gig drive. It takes over 45 seconds to boot. Now, remember, it used to be minutes to boot, but I wondered, it was like, why is this drive so much slower? And it's because of the controller that you have. If you have an existing legacy older controller, SATA controller, that you're going to plug this drive into, then it won't be as fast. It'll be faster than a regular drive, but it's not going to be as fast as advertised. And that's one of the things I noticed right away on my laptop. I wish it was faster, but it wasn't. Something I noticed, though, a metric that's being used, it's called IOPS. That's how you pronounce it. IOPS, and it's IOPS. And that stands for Input Output Operations Per Second. And it's a common performance measurement used as a benchmark computer for benchmark computer storage devices, like hard drives and solid state drives. Well, if you look at the IOPS for the read and write, they have random read, random write, sequential read, and sequential write. Well, when you look at the random read and random write IOPS numbers, you're going to see great differences. You're going to find the Samsung and OCZ drives are far bigger numbers than their competition. I noticed the Crucial brand has very low IOPS numbers. So it kind of made me sway away from them. They're getting positive reviews, but if you're going to want to put this with a really good controller that is a SATA 3 controller and you want to have a throughput of 6 gig, then you want drives that have much higher IOP ratings. To keep it simple, go with drives that have the higher IOPS, because you could always upgrade that SSD to a controller that is faster. So just keep that in mind when you're purchasing SSD drives and you're watching these prices. Right now, I think the best bang for the buck with having a high performance drive that's very reliable is Samsung. Now, OCZ is out there. They're doing some great with the Vertex 4. Very nice. Either one of them would definitely work well. But right now, I would rank personally the Samsung 1, OCZ 2, and then everything else. And take a look at all the different brands. Anybody that's making memory, they're making SSDs. But take a look at all of the ratings and then look at all the reviews. Whether you're on Amazon or Newegg, take a look at all the reviews, read them, and remember, I always eliminate the ones that are very, very, very horrible and eliminate the glowing ones. So the 5-star, eliminate a couple of them, eliminate some of the 1-stars. The truth lies somewhere in the middle. So keep that in mind when you're looking at reviews. I always throw out the best, throw out the worst, and then let's take a look at where the reviews kind of sit. That's sort of my way of looking at reviews on anything, whether it's a hardware or a hotel, no matter what it is. So just keep that in mind, where the reviews are coming from. Someone that got their TV and it was damaged because the box shipped, well, there's a chance you're not going to get it damaged. UPS isn't going to damage it for you. So I can understand where they gave it a 1. So you got to remember, it had nothing to do with the performance of the TV. It's just they're angry because it arrived damaged, and then they socked them with a 1 rating. Take a look at those 1 stars, because they may not be fitting for you for what you're looking for the product. My words of wisdom on reviews. Have a client that has an older Dell server and looking to increase the storage internally. Now, the RAID is already set up with 250 gig drives with a SCSI drive, we don't have room to add another drive there. And it's not worth taking all the 250 gig drives and putting bigger drives and redoing the RAID and restoring the server. So I said, no problem. I will get an internal terabyte drive and a controller, a SATA controller. I'll pop it in and we'll see what happens. Well, I got on site. This actually took two different trips. One, I had never opened the server to check the slots. I used SIW to tell me the slots that were available, and I didn't get as accurate as a recon as I thought, and I bought the wrong PCI controller. That kind of set us back a week so I could get the right controller. So I got the right PCIX controller, put the controller in, connected it up to the drive, and I noticed on boot up, the BIOS seen the BIOS of the controller. So I knew, hey, controller's working. But it listed no drives. And I had the right power to it. I could feel the drive spinning. I know the drive is connected. I don't understand why it won't see it. We booted up into Windows Small Business Server 2003. It would not see it. I went into computer management, into the disk management, could not see the drive. Controller, no problem. It detected, loaded the driver. Everything was beautiful. The controller looked great. But this drive, brand new, and I said, I can't believe this drive is bad. It just, I don't accept that. So maybe it is, and we'll go with a different drive maybe. I take it out, and I haven't went back yet, because this was just a week ago. I took this external drive, which was a Western Digital Caviar Blue. I plugged it into my system. It came right up, and I was able to format it. Now, here's the thing. Is it possible that I needed to pre-format this drive before I connected it to the controller? That didn't make any sense. I should have been able to format it while it was booting up. I should have been able to hit that Control S for the BIOS of that card, and I should have been able to go right in and set up. This is where you had the option to set up a RAID set if you had multiple SATA drives connected. But I only had the one. It just would not see that drive. I don't understand. The drive is a perfectly good functional drive because I formatted it right while it was connected to my device that I have. I have a carrier that I could just drop SATA drives in, and it makes it USB and plugged right in. No problem. Alaskan Bear Cub is, did I read the manual? Of course not. But why do we read the manual? No. It should have been pretty obvious that it should have connected. One of the things I did, I also added a jumper to slow down the drive because it was a SATA 3 drive, and just in case it couldn't handle the SATA 2 controller, there's a jumper that you can jumper two pins to kind of slow the speed down of the drive from 6 gig to 3 gig. That didn't help. We actually ended up going temporarily right now an external terabyte drive that was laying around. I plugged that in USB. I made a share called Archive, and now we're moving large quantities of files to that. And I'm also making sure that that is also backed up to the drives that they add to remove. We got around the storage issue, but I'm worried that, you know, what's happening with that controller and that drive. Now, I have an older Dell server behind me here that's similar to the one that's at my client's office, and I'm going to put it in there, fire it up, and see if I get, you know, it's not the exact same server. To make a long story short, what is interesting is since the server's so old, my client is now looking at, hey, Mike, why don't we just get me quotes for a new server and moving forward for an upgrade? It actually may work out to our benefit because the operating system is so old. It's a Small Business Server 2003. I can move them right into Small Business Server 2011, do the upgrade, make it a whole new server, and that might be the way to go. We're going to do that and move forward. So I was really glad that my client looks at things that way. This is a small law firm. that's going to work out in the long run, where we're just, you know, why spend the time and money on this when we can easily just upgrade to a new server, which we got to do anyway. Want to talk about the Mac OS X kind of networking 101. If you are in a situation, and I had to talk someone through this, someone who was a Windows-only user, and they were handed a MacBook Pro, and they needed to connect to a share that I've set up a server in their house, and they have network shares, and he needed to connect to them because he turned it on, and he's like clueless as to how he can see those shares. So one of the first things when you have a Mac, if you touch the desktop, a blank area of the desktop, you are always going to get the what they call the Finder menu. This is where you get File, Edit, View, Go, Windows, and Help. If you're looking for a Mac program, always pick Go. Right off the bat, to connect, all you have to do is click Go after you click on a blank space on the desktop. The very last item, depending on which version of the OS X, if it's a fairly newer version, the last item in that menu is Connect to Server. When you pick that and connect to server, you're going to get a space where you can put the server address. Remember the following. Put S as in Sam, M as in Michael, B as in boy. So SMB //, then put the server name, then put a slash, and put the share. So it's very simple. And if you put the server name and that doesn't come up, know the IP address of that device. Put the IP address in there. Then you'll be presented with log on. So you're going to have to know the login name and password that allows you to have access. Unless it's totally open and it doesn't require any kind of security credentials, it'll show all of the shares that are there for that server. But if you have to enter your credentials, enter them, the Mac will ask you, do you want to add this to the security keychain, to the password keychain, so it'll remember the next time you go connect, you won't have to enter those credentials. Say yes. Let it add it to the keychain. And that's what the Mac calls its sort of depot of all of the credentials that you enter to access other devices. So I hope I made that easy for someone who is going to, you're on a Mac and you want to connect to a Windows share. That's the way to do it. And then the share should appear on the desktop and then you can double click it. And this is how I access the music that you hear and the intro and the outro of the show. I have an iMac and sitting right here, it's connected to the mixer. But to get some of those, some of that info and that music, I pull that from my Windows computer. So I have a share set up, and then I had to use that process for my Mac to then take those music files, and I drag them to a program called Soundbite, and that's my cart player on my iMac. So anything you hear musically on the show, that's how I get the files from Windows over to the Mac, and then drop them into the cart player. Hope that helps anybody that's in that situation. Want to talk about some email issues I ran into. I was away last weekend. I did get one call. I was sort of unplugged for the whole weekend, but Saturday morning, I did get a phone call. It was interesting. We were out of the hotel, and I was in an area where the reception was better, and a client called me. And he said, Mike, I have a problem that we moved from Verizon to Comcast. And that was the first thing I was like, why didn't you tell me? But okay, it's interesting how certain small clients that I don't interface with on a regular basis, but they're clients, you know, I've helped them in the past. It's interesting how they don't call me to tell me that they're going to do something major like that so I can tell them, well, these are the things to look out for. On every business card, on every printed material, they have a Verizon.net email. So you can see where we're going here. They move to Comcast, and then they learn that they only have access to the Verizon email for 30 days. And they're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Everything we have printed. Now, what's interesting is they have their own domain, and they have a great domain name that matches the company name. And whoever set this up way back did not set up email for them and let them use a Verizon.net email address. I don't get it. It's so easy. And we've talked about it so many times here, but it's amazing how many people out there have no idea that they can get email for free by using Google Apps and by taking that domain, registering it with Google. They give you all the instructions for what to do, and it's so simple. I can't wait till Carrie has, he's editing a video from soup to nuts on how every step, and it's going to be a great video that you're going to want, and I'm going to make sure that I link to it and everybody gets it, you know, can get to it. He goes to Comcast. Now he's like, okay, I want to move back. Wait till you hear this. He's going to move back from Comcast to Verizon, and Verizon tells him, you can't have that name. I'm like, and he's like, what? Yeah, it'll be a whole new install and account. We can't guarantee that we can give you that name. And so here's my advice to him. I said, look, go back to Verizon. I'd rather you have that first, the Fios. But next, escalate by talking to a supervisor. There has to be a way for them to maintain your same email address. Do that. And then at least lock that in so you can keep that name. But here's what we're going to do. I'm going to set you up to where you have your email accounts for free. And you're not going to be dependent on an ISP. Anybody that's providing you your internet, you don't want to be dependent on email from them. I always tell my story. I had Comcast for 15 years. And I had an email address for 15 years. Never thinking I would ever leave Comcast, right? Well, I move, and then there's a thing called Fios. And right at that moment, and this was a few years ago, it dawned on me, oh my God, I'm never going to use an email again. And this was when Gmail was just starting. I made everybody in the household here get a Gmail account. And I said, we are not going to embrace the Verizon emails. We are not going to go to Verizon.net email. I'm not going to get burned again. I'm going to have an independent email. And then since then, I've also, my mhsconsulting.net, I mean, miketechshow.com, all of those domains that I have, tech-vets, all those domains are now Google Apps, and they're all set up for free email. Now, yes, we're putting all of our eggs in one big Google basket, hoping that they don't go under or anything happens from security issues. But for right now, it's fine. And you want to stick with Google and stick with Gmail. It's reliable. It's free. You have literally almost unlimited storage. So there's no reason to not do that. The point here is anybody that you know is tied to their ISP's email, talk them into at least going to Gmail or going to a vanity domain, and then set up the email for free for them, for that domain. Another client, literally, I was there Tuesday night, and same thing. They were moving from Comcast, and now they're stuck again. They have their email, and I was like, look, we're going to move you to Gmail. You got 30 days to you have access to your account, and we're going to set it up. And so I went through the process. Now, Google, when you're in Gmail, they have a process that you can follow that will let you import all the email. All it's doing is you enter the credentials of where you're moving from, and it will just use POP to pull all the email in, and it will also pull the contact. That may take time depending on how much email you have, but that's another easy way to move all your email. There's another great website, and it's called TrueSwitch. TrueSwitch will absolutely help you migrate from any account to any account. And it manages and helps you with that process by notifying everybody, by making the conversion. So I'll put that into the show notes. That's TrueSwitch. I think you'll really like that or recommend that for anybody that's migrating from, say, you're going from whoever to Comcast or whoever to Verizon. I would keep everybody away from a primary email that's on an ISP because you never know if you're going to move or change. That was two issues that were taken care of. A third is I get an email from one of my clients that has just moved to Comcast for their internet a couple weeks ago. They have an Exchange server. Everything's locked down great. They also have Trend Micro for their spam filtering. As messages come in, it does not come directly to the server. Well, wait to hear this. They have messages that they've sent out to someone and it comes back that it's blocked. They're on a spam list. I've talked about this utility, actually a website, a service, which is great for diagnosing your MX records. And it's called MX Toolbox. This is an incredible service. All you have to do is put the domain or the IP address that's in question. And there is an option that you can click to check if they're on a blacklist. I'm clicking right now on the IP address of that server, and I am checking the blacklist. They are still listed on two spam lists. Now, this blacklist, you can get on it by various ways. But something I read by one of the lists that they were on as to why they're on it. They were on it because the reputation of that IP address is bad. And I was like, just on that reputation, this IP address was either part of a block of IP addresses that Comcast had given out in the past that there were spammers, or the actual individual IP address was identified as a spammer. Now my client has this IP address. Guess what? They're labeled as spammers. So you now have to go into each of the services that they're listed on, and MX Toolbox provides all of the lists of those services. And each one, you got to apply to be delisted. Now, they were on 8 of them yesterday. They're now on 2 because it can take 24 to 48 hours to get off the list. I started that process of each one where some you have to just literally check some boxes. Others, you have to send a special email to a special address referencing a special number and describing what you've done to make sure that you're not spamming anybody anymore. One of the first things I've done was I double-checked the firewall. We're blocking SMTP out from any device other than the server. The server has no infections on it. And just to make sure, the workstations that were in the office, I had them run Malwarebytes and Super Anti Spyware on every single system. There was only 4 of them, just to make absolutely sure there's no infection that we're missing that might have accidentally creeped in and caused maybe sending out some bad emails. Something to be aware of. You don't panic if your email is blocked and you get a message back. It usually tells you, you know, Spam House or Barracuda or whatever has blocked this message. If you are being blocked because you've been identified as a potential spammer, don't panic. You go to MX Toolbox, you put in your IP addresses, and you make sure, okay, what blacklists are you on? If you're on a bunch of blacklists, then you got to stop and you got to start locking things down. And the first thing you do is make sure that nobody can send out mail. Only the server, okay, can send mail. And once you stop that, then if anybody does get infected, it's just going to stay within your environment. It's not going to make it to the wild, and you wouldn't be identified as a potential spammer. You want to make sure that you've taken all the precautions of locking down your Exchange server properly, making sure that you don't have an open relay. That's another problem. That misconfigured Exchange servers, this happens a lot. Once you do that, then you got to make sure you've eliminated all infections on any computers behind the router. And so that could be a laborious task based on how many systems are there. You make sure all of them are clean. Once you know systems are clean, servers locked down, you've done everything at the router to make sure all the rules are set, then you start getting yourself off the lists. And then you follow the instructions for each of those services. That's what I was doing yesterday for a client and making sure that now they can safely send and receive mail. Let's quickly get to only have a couple emails here. This is from Josh, and he says, just started listening a few weeks ago, heard about you on Podnuts Daily, and I love the show. Just wanted to mention about HP ProCurve switches that I heard you talk about on a past episode. I love them also. We use them in the school district I work for. They work great and are easier than Cisco in a lot of ways to program. They use Cisco commands, but you can do the same thing in fewer steps than it would take on Cisco. Personally, I think Cisco is too big for their britches, and their cert tests for CCNA and such prove it. Also, check me on this, but HP ProCurve used to have a lifetime warranty, and I think they still do. We had one blade switch have some fans go bad. We got on the phone and had a replacement chassis the next day. Just plug the blades in, save the configuration from the old switch and the new one, and bam, up and running. Thanks for the great job. And this is from Josh. Josh, thank you very, very much for that. This is from Brandon, and very interesting. He sent me a picture of this, a screenshot. I enjoy listening to your podcast each week and look forward to learning something new. While at work today, I had two calls of users reporting the following appearing on their screen. See the attachment. I have seen fake antiviruses before, but this is the first one that I have seen that looks almost exactly like a valid malware product. As you can tell, the image appears in the web browser. If I hovered over the clean button, I could tell you could click on the button, which I'm sure if I did, an infection would have been downloaded. Thought I would forward this on and to warn everyone to be on the lookout. Now, here's the thing. It says it's a Microsoft Security Essentials alert, and it looks identical to a Microsoft Security Essentials screen. I mean, they're getting really good out there and faking poor users out to think that they are infected and getting them to click on to these fake warnings. And the warning itself is an infection. And this one looks really good. And I want to thank Brandon for sending me that. And it's just one of those things that we got to be aware of and educate everybody, all of your clients, everybody you come in contact with. They can't trust anything that's popping up. You know, in the old days, you could trust, I have to apply these updates, or yeah, my antivirus is expiring and I got to renew. That's the old days. Now we can't trust anything that's popping up. And if anything's popping up, they should stop, call the help desk, or call you and run it by you. And I have a lot of clients that do that. They'll call me and say, Mike, this just popped up. And I'll remote in and take a look and say, okay, that's fine. Or no, this is an infection. Go get a cup of coffee. I'll start cleaning your system. Just keep in mind that, I mean, they're getting to be look pretty good. And I don't like the fact that, see, now I've been installing a lot of Microsoft Security Essentials, and to see them look just like that screen, I could just see that happening. I know my clients, you know, it looks so good, they're going to click on it. This is an article from Peter O, and I meant to link this a few weeks ago. This is major security holes in the Cisco Telepresence product, and it could allow attackers to execute arbitrary code and cause denial of service conditions or inject commands. So I'm going to have a link. This is from ZDNet, and it's an article about a security problem with Cisco Telepresence product. I'll have that also in the show notes. If you purchase anything from Amazon or know anybody that purchases from Amazon, please use my link. It helps support the show. Your prices are the same, but but I get a commission. And the link is amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/amazon or go to miketechshow.com and click the Amazon link on the left-hand side. Everything you buy. And I thank you so much for everybody that's been using my link and supporting the show. I greatly appreciate that. Thank you so much. I have some music for tonight. I didn't have anything planned at first. And as I was going through looking for some music I'm going to play in the post show, I came across this and I didn't realize I have it. It's a song that I really like from Five for Fighting, but it's the acoustic version. And I had never heard this before until right before the show tonight. So I'm sharing it with you. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
I can't stand the fly. I'm not that naive. I'm just out to find the better part of me. I'm more than a bird, more than a plane, more than some pretty face beside a train. And it's not easy to be me. Wish that I could cry, fall upon my knees, find a way to lie, but a home I'll never see. It may sound absurd, don't be naive. Even heroes have the right to bleed. I may be disturbed, won't you concede? Even heroes have dreaming, it's not easy to be me. And up, up and away, away from me. Now it's alright, you can all sleep sound tonight. I'm not crazy or anything. I can't stand a fly. I'm not that naive. Men want men to ride with clouds between their knees. I'm only a man, an accelerate sheet, digging for kryptonite on this one-way street. Only a man, a phony red sheet, looking for special things inside of me, 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 inside of me. I'm only a man, a phony red sheep, only a man looking for a dream. I'm only a man in a phony red sheet. It's not easy. No, it's not easy to be me.
And that was Five for Fighting and the song Superman. And that is the acoustic version. And I'll have a link where you can purchase that from Amazon.com. Pretty obvious. Five for Fighting. If you didn't make the connection, they're hockey fans. And you get 5-minute penalty for fighting. So that's why Five for Fighting. They all liked hockey, and that's where the name of the group came from. So with that, I hope you enjoyed the show. And remember to check out and download Instant House Call and give it a try. Play with that. Also, use my Amazon link and stay subscribed to the show. Share the links for the show and ask a friend, ask a person, hey, do you listen to my tech show? If not, hey, I got this great podcast that you can learn stuff. So spread the word. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I will talk to you same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.